shadow, the same profile in almost every single country.
We're going to continue this conversation and then post online at democracynow.org. Scott Horton teaches at Columbia Law School, writes for Harper's Magazine, and Bob Perry writes for Consortium News, and we'll link to his piece there. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, and Paul Huckabee, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Behu Grand, David Prude, R.L. Boone, Vesta Godarz, Anthony Manzo. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Also, check out our website. We have a full-time social media fellowship. Check out the details at democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Rob Wallace Speech, Big Farms Grow Unhealthy Food, They Also Grow New Diseases. That's next Monday, March 6th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland.
Bird flu, Ebola, Zika virus are emerging across the globe at increasing pace. Evolutionary biologist Rob Wallace shows that the apparently disconnected outbreaks are the product of globalized agribusiness. He also discusses solutions, such as an agroecology model of food production.
Again, that's Rob Wallace speaking on Big Farms Grow Unhealthy Food, They Also Grow New Diseases, on Monday, March 6th at 7 p.m. at First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the premiere screening of Precipice Award-funded animation project, Jen Likes Heroin, on Thursday, March 9th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Jen Likes Heroin is an animated short film which takes place at the long-defunct X-Ray Cafe. Following the animation, there will be a showing of the documentary about the X-Ray Cafe called X-Ray Visions, and a short acoustic set by Sean Krogan of The Pinnacles and Cracker Bash. Again, that's a screening of X-Ray Visions and Jen Likes Heroin and a live performance by Sean Krogan on Thursday, March 9th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi. The time is 5:01 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, workers organized by VAS Workers' Rights Education Project marched to the Portland Development Commission office in Old Town this morning to demand a permanent lease for the MLK Junior Worker Center.
The organization Hispanic Voice for Community Change is holding a rally today at 4:30 p.m. outside the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement offices to protest what they're calling a campaign of terror.
And the Supreme Court announced that it will not hear a case involving a transgender teen who wants to be able to sue the boys' bathrooms at his Virginia high school.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, March 6th, 2017. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Zella Zellas Marchant. The Latino community organization Hispanic Voice for Community Change held a rally today at 4:30 p.m. outside the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement offices to protest what they are calling a campaign of terror. The protesters are asking Mayor Ted Wheeler and the Portland City Council to declare the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, or ICE, not welcome in the city of Portland. The protest was held at the ICE offices located at 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue. The rally comes amidst recently released documents showing that Multnomah County Sheriff deputies have been working with ICE agents to apprehend and deport undocumented immigrants. The documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act show the collusion between federal ICE agents and the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. Current Oregon state law prohibits any state or local employee from assisting federal ICE agents in capturing and deporting undocumented immigrants unless the immigrants have been convicted of a crime. Once again, that protest began at 4:30 today at 4310 Southwest McAdam in front of the federal ICE offices. To find out more about the rally, you can call 971-221-8968.
Workers organized by VAS Workers' Rights Education Project march across the Burnside Bridge to the Portland Development Commission office in Old Town this morning to demand a permanent lease for the Martin Luther King Jr. Workers' Center. The march was organized by VAS in conjunction with the Portland Solidarity Network, Oregon AFL-CIO, the Northwest Worker Justice Project, and the Coalition of Communities of Color, among other groups. They want the City of Portland to grant VAS ownership rights to the MLK Jr. Worker Center located at 240 Northeast MLK Boulevard. The center is currently housed in a temporary facility since the PDC refused to renew VAS's long-term lease in 2013 and instead switched to a month-to-month lease. When the marchers reached PDC headquarters at 222 Northwest 5th Avenue around 11 this morning, they were allowed in the building to speak with PDC officials, including Executive Director Kimberly Branham. Branham listened and responded to questions and said the city will get back to VAS by next week with an update. VAS representatives expressed frustration with the slow-moving negotiations with the city. They say they can't move forward with improvements to the Worker Center until they regain their long-term lease, and they question the strength and sincerity of the PDC's commitment to their cause. Improvements for the Worker Center would include bathrooms, drinkable water, adequate offices, classrooms, and meeting spaces. Since 2008, the MLK Jr. Worker Center has generated over 27,000 temporary and permanent jobs with respectable wages and fair working conditions. The center provides safe space for worker-employer negotiations and has organized and trained local day laborers to enhance their job skills and protect against wage theft and to advocate for their right to a livable wage.
The Trump administration is taking a second crack at using an executive order to block people from half a dozen countries from entering the United States. The order signed today and set to take effect later this month will revoke and replace the controversial executive order signed just 1 week after Inauguration Day. Nell Abram from Free Speech Radio News has more.
With no public ceremony or fanfare, President Donald Trump signed a revised version of his controversial travel ban Monday morning. The updated executive order blocks new visas for individuals from six Muslim-majority nations for a period of 90 days and retains a 120-day ban on refugees entering the country, though it no longer indefinitely bars Syrians.
Accordingly, it is important to note that nothing in this executive order affects existing lawful permanent residents or persons with current authorization to enter our homeland.
Department of Homeland Security Chief John Kelly.
We do not make the law, but are sworn to enforce it. We have no other option. We are going to work closely to implement and enforce it humanely, respectfully, and with professionalism, but we will enforce the law.
The original travel ban, issued in late January, blocked entry to all foreign nationals from the six countries still covered: Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, plus Iraq, irrespective of their U.S. immigration status. The first ban also took effect immediately. Legal permanent residents who had traveled abroad were unable to return home. Current visa holders from the nations on the list couldn't enter the country. Under the new version, implementation is delayed 10 days, and immigration officers are permitted to grant waivers on a case-by-case basis. U.S. officials continue to deny the ban targets Muslims, claiming rather that the nations in question were unable to provide sufficient information about their citizens to satisfy U.S. vetting requirements. After the president signed the revised order, the Secretaries of State and Homeland Security, joined by the U.S. Attorney General, held a very brief press conference. They each delivered prepared remarks and took no questions. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson explained why Iraq was removed from the revised executive order.
Iraq is an important ally in the fight to defeat ISIS, with their brave soldiers fighting in close coordination with America's men and women in uniform. This intense review over the past month identified multiple security measures that the State Department and the government of Iraq will be implementing to achieve our shared objective of preventing those with criminal or terroristic intent from reaching the United States.
Tillerson did not expound on what those security measures are or how they will affect Iraqi nationals seeking entry into the United States. Much criticism of the travel ban has centered on the fact that no one convicted of a terrorist attack on U.S. soil hailed from any of the countries on the list. But according to Attorney General Jeff Sessions, many people seeking to support or commit acts of terrorism have entered the country through the refugee program.
In fact, today more than 300 people, according to the FBI, who came here as refugees are under an FBI investigation today for potential terrorism-related activities.
Immigrant advocates point out, however, those investigations are just that. They aren't convictions. As in the prior ban, the total number of refugees who can be resettled in the U.S. in any given year is capped at 50,000. Those already approved but not yet in the country may find themselves back to square one due to a limited window of time during which they must travel. The update comes 6 weeks after President Trump's initial executive order, which quickly created a firestorm of chaos and international condemnation, trapping travelers mid-trip and wreaking havoc at airports. 1 week later, a federal judge in Seattle issued a nationwide stay, and legal challenges to the original ban are still making their way through the courts. Karen Tumlin, legal director of the National Immigration Law Center, says those cases should still stand, given the revised ban is not substantively changed and questions about intent are identical.
For me, there's no question that this revised executive order, when it goes into place later in March, is just as unconstitutional under the Free Establishment Clause as the original, regardless of the tweaks to the minority religious exemption. You know, the touchstone principle of the Establishment Clause is that the government shall not discriminate against or certain religious groups or favor or disfavor them. And even with this, again, what I think is a cosmetic change, you know, from top to bottom, this is an order that attempts to discriminate against those considered to be Muslim and from Muslim countries.
The travel ban is one of a number of executive orders the president has signed related to immigration. Abed Ayoub is legal and policy director for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. He says that be it this travel ban or the first, the upshot is the same.
This ban is part of the, it's clearly part of the administration's ongoing anti-immigrant efforts. When you couple this with the raids that we're seeing and the detentions that we're seeing at the southern border, there is clearly an agenda here to push forward an anti-immigrant agenda from this administration, and we will continue fighting this and continue doing what we can to protect our community from such actions.
The updated travel ban takes effect March 16th. Nell Abram, FSRN.
Construction of small accessory dwelling units in Portland has skyrocketed in recent years as high home prices make single-family residential homes increasingly unaffordable both to rent and to buy. Accessory dwelling units, commonly known as granny flats or ADUs, are small residential living spaces built on lots that already contain a separate single-family home. Portland building codes cap ADU residences at a maximum of 800 square feet per unit. 10 years ago, 30 times more single-family homes were built than ADUs. Last year in Portland, the number of newly constructed ADUs was almost equal to the number of new single-family homes. 867 single-family homes were constructed, compared to 615 ADUs. By far, the largest sector of newly constructed housing units in Portland continues to be multifamily apartment buildings. Almost 70% of all new residences constructed in Portland last year were units in large multifamily apartment buildings. Multifamily apartment buildings are expected to comprise more than 75% of all new residential construction within the next few years.
Yeah. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Labor Radio at 6, Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, and for the Working Class. That's followed at 6:30 by Prison Pipeline, dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather: showers likely before 10 p.m., then rain after 10 p.m., low around 39. Chance of precipitation is 80%. Tomorrow, rain, high near 48. Chance of precipitation is 100%. Today in history: in 1857, the Supreme Court announced its decision in the case of Dred Scott versus Sanford, finding that slaves were not citizens of the United States and thus could not sue in federal court. The decision was overturned by the 13th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. The quote for the day is from the social reformer and writer Frederick Douglass, who said, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, or it may be both, moral and physical, but it must be a struggle."
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Good afternoon, Mississippi! Are you fired up? Are you ready to go?
United Auto Workers President Dennis Williams. Canton, Mississippi Nissan workers, supported by the United Auto Workers, the NAACP, Senator Bernie Sanders, and activist actor Danny Glover, held a spirited March on Mississippi over the weekend in Canton. The message was that worker rights are human rights. Nissan workers want a union, and they want to be able to vote for a union free of fear and intimidation from Nissan.
Brothers and sisters, friends all, it is your moment, your time in history. You will determine not only the faith of this facility here, but you will send a signal to workers everywhere. It's time to rise up. It's time to join together. It's time to change things.
The UAW filed more unfair labor practice charges against Nissan just before the weekend march. The union says Nissan illegally prevented workers from handing out pro-union literature at the plant and asking workers to sign cards supporting the UAW. Senator Bernie Sanders told the Nissan workers that their struggle for freedom, dignity, and union rights has the power to inspire other workers nationwide.
What this struggle is about is a struggle for dignity. And if you can stand up to a powerful multinational corporation in Canton, Mississippi, workers all over this country are going to say, we can do it too. So Mississippi, UAW, the eyes of the country and the eyes of the world are on you. You can begin that revolution here that says that workers in America are entitled to justice, decent wages, decent benefits.
Activist actor Danny Glover marched with workers in Canton over the weekend, as he has for many years in many places, in support of union rights as human rights.
What makes this country great is the people, the citizens, the hardworking union members. This is what makes this crazy. This is what democracy is about right here.
Betty Jones is a pro-UAW Nissan worker.
We on that line each and every day working hard. It is about us having a voice and be partnering with Nissan and discuss our policies, our job security, our environment we work in, wages, and just safety. So that's what we're all about.
We're gonna keep on, keep on, rocking that freedom train.
Workers Independent News is brought to you in part by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Supreme Court today announced that it will not hear a case involving a transgender teen who wants to be able to use the boys' bathroom at his Virginia high school. Last month, the Departments of Justice and Education revoked an Obama-era guidance that said schools generally must treat transgender students consistent with their gender identity. The Fourth Circuit Court's decision in the case relied heavily on that 2015 opinion letter from the Education Department's Office of Civil Rights. Both the Gloucester County School Board and the student known as Gigi had asked the court to go ahead with the case regardless. The Supremes, however, have sent the case back to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit for reconsideration in light of the new administration's decision.
Donald Trump supporters took to the streets last Saturday in a series of what they were calling March for Trump rallies across the country. There were only three events in Oregon, the largest in Lake Oswego, where an estimated 200 Trump supporters found themselves outnumbered by an estimated 700 anti-Trump protesters. The Trump supporters gathered at noon in Lake Oswego's George Rogers Park and marched northwards on the east side of State Street. Meanwhile, the anti-Trump protesters carrying signs and waving to passing cars lined the west side of State Street. Police from Lake Oswego, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, the City of Portland, and neighboring communities such as Beaverton, Tigard, and Gresham did their best to keep the opposing groups apart. The rally dispersed around 2 p.m. after a small group of Trump supporters tried to interrupt a group of anti-Trump protesters meeting in Millennium Plaza Park to hear speeches. Three of the protesters were arrested on minor charges, and the rally ended with damage limited for the most part to a few shouting matches. We're fortunate to have two of the people who participated in Saturday's protest with us in the studio now. Actually, we have four of them. The ones we'll be talking to are Christian Bedford, a 12-year-old student at Lake Oswego Junior High, and his mom, Jennifer Cook. Jennifer also brought two other younger children, and you might hear the noises in the background, and they're probably asking a lot better questions than I will. Christian and Jennifer, thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thanks for having us.
Christian, let's start with you. Actually, you and I met at Saturday's protest, and I was very impressed with your sense of calm and purpose. So it's a pleasure to talk with you now. What were your reasons for attending the protest?
My reasons were I just wanted to show, because I just wanted to show how Donald Trump was affecting the community, and I wanted to be a part of that.
Was that your first protest?
No, it was my second one. I went to the
Women's March.
Oh, the big one downtown with over 100,000 people. Yeah. How was that? Pretty exciting?
It was fun.
Now, you live in Lake Oswego and attend junior high there. What grade are you in?
Seventh.
And are there other students in your classes who are as politically involved as you are? Is that typical there?
No, there's not that many politically involved students there.
And you're part, Christian, of a mixed-race family. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's influenced your political views?
Well, I think it's influenced my political views because not being the same color as most people in my school, it's just like it's just a little different. And
Have you been the victim of any kind of insults or hate speech there directly?
No, I haven't. There hasn't been anything directly said to me, so I haven't really noticed that.
Now, Lake Oswego, I think, has a reputation for being predominantly white. What's it like to be a mixed-race student at Lake Oswego? Again, you mentioned there aren't too many. Again, it's mostly white at the junior high.
Yeah, there's not that many other colored kids, but I don't think it makes that much of a difference. I mean, people still see me as just a person, and they don't see my color as a different, thing about me.
Now, the timing of the protest in Lake Oswego was Saturday. Last Wednesday, of course, you're at the junior high, but Lake Oswego High School, there was some racist graffiti found in the three of the men's bathrooms, the boys' bathrooms there. I'm not going to say what the graffiti was, but it was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. This was on the walls again of the bathrooms. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did hear about that.
What were your reactions, your thoughts about that?
It didn't feel good. I did not like it at all.
Was there any kind of action at the junior high to kind of combat that? Was there any kind of talks from the administration about, that kind of hate speech? If it occurs at the junior high, Lake Oswego Junior High, what would happen?
No, we didn't really talk about it. I don't even know if the principals really told our teachers about it, but we didn't talk about it.
Now, your mom, who's also here with us in the studio with two more little ones, posted a Facebook video of you, a Christian, at Saturday's protest. It's just a short clip, about 40 seconds, in which you voice your concerns about Donald Trump as president. I'd like to play that now for our listeners, if we could.
Ever since Donald Trump has been elected for president, I feel like I can't be safe in the place where I should be. I feel like people are more confident in being racist and more comfortable. I feel like I can't tell an adult if people are being racist because I don't know if they'll care. I think that Donald Trump should resign and make everything peaceful again. This is what's happening when Donald Trump is president, and I don't think it's right. I think that people think that I, just because I have a different skin color, am a different person. But no, that's incorrect. That's why I think Donald Trump should resign.
That was audio from our guest, Christian Bedford, at Saturday's anti-Trump protest in Lake Oswego. Very articulate. Very well said, Christian. It was recorded by his mom, Jennifer Cook, who's also here with us now. Jennifer, you not only brought your son, Christopher, but also two of your younger children, both baby daughters. How old are they and what are their names?
My daughter, Charlie, is 19 months, and this over here is Kinsley, and I actually babysit her. She's not, I can't take credit for her, but she's 21 months.
Okay, and yeah. What's your daughter's name again? I'm sorry.
Charlie.
Okay, and Charlie was actually at the protest on Saturday.
Yeah, Charlie is my smallest activist. She's been to all of the protests with me. So.
And Jennifer, you braved what on Saturday was cold, wet weather.
Yeah.
Actually, there was some downpours there among some clearing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, several white supremacist groups on the pro-Trump side
yeah.
to do that. Why do you feel it was important for you and your family to be there?
I'm very passionate about these issues, you know, obviously because they directly affect my family, the political climate right now and what's happening. Can you
turn this? Oh, we've got the young one. That's Kinsley there.
Yeah.
got a hold of somebody's iPhone and
sorry.
Is playing a little music.
So I just think it's important to show my children that, you know, they can stand up and make a difference, and they don't just have to allow these things to happen and just say, oh, well, this is how it is now. You know.
Now, were you concerned, Jennifer, about the March for Trump participants? You know, I didn't know it at the time, but there were actually several of them carrying weapons. And there was a white supremacist, white power group there called the 3% Militia,
yeah.
which actually makes a point out of carrying weapons. They're very proud of that fact. With all the kind of the shouting and anger that was going on, it seemed a little frightening in retrospect for me. Did you feel the same way? Or?
I did. I tried to stay, you know, very aware when I'm at these things, especially with my children, because I don't ever want to put them in harm's way. So once I did see the crowd start to kind of push past the police line and them running around the back of the building, and that's when I decided to kind of take my kids down to the park. We left about two or three minutes before we heard that all those things happened. So my mom intuition was right on point right there. So we didn't get to see the nasty side of it.
And I was actually standing next to you and Christian and Charlie for a lot of the protest. And we were all lined up on the west side of State Street.
Yeah.
Again, there was kind of some shouting back and forth, but mostly we were just holding signs and waving to passing motorists.
Yeah.
So I think we were somewhat sheltered from any confrontations. The police also were preventing the two groups from crossing the street, across State Street,
yeah.
to kind of get into each other's faces to avoid that. So that was good.
Yeah.
Now, Jennifer, as the mom in a mixed-race family, what do you tell Christian about the election, you know, back in November and its aftermath? It seems Trump supporters seem more emboldened now in expressing hatred for people of color.
Absolutely. Trump didn't create racism. He didn't create racists, but this administration have emboldened them and have allowed them to feel like they can say and do as they please, and they can have this hatred out loud, which in a way, it's kind of nice to know what we're dealing with, and it's in the open. But also, we have large groups of people who are feeling unsafe, you know. And so when we have these kinds of gatherings, it feels nice to know the majority of our community is still behind us and is still rallying. And, you know, I just want my children to feel safe. I don't want to worry when he's 5 minutes late from the park. Did someone see him? You know, was it an opportunity for somebody to hurt him just because he's black?
Do you have any concerns about life in Lake Oswego these days? Again, it's a prominent, predominantly white community.
Yeah. Well, and there were several racist incidents that happened at the school back in November that we were made aware of as well. So it's kind of an ongoing thing.
At the junior high?
At the junior high and the high school.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard about the junior high. What were the incidents there?
The one, the incident at the junior high was in regards to Jewish people. And the high school one, somebody wrote on the high school Facebook page about harming black people.
Oh, that I saw. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then last Wednesday, as I mentioned, was the graffiti, racist graffiti on the bathroom walls. One of the initial organizers of the pro-Trump group on Saturday, and he pulled out, is Kevin Kerwin, who owns a computer repair shop in Lake Oswego, but is known as kind of a very openly confrontational guy.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be wrong to call him racist in some of his views. Have you run into him in Lake Oswego at all, or any concerns about him?
I haven't personally run into him, but I was definitely made aware of him. And you know, knowing that some people like that are very close to you, it is difficult to feel very safe.
I had one more question for Christian, but he's out the door there with Charlie. Christian, can you come back here for a second? And he's got his hands full.
He's a big help.
Oh, Christian, thank you very much. Just one last question for you. At the protest, I was actually there with a friend who lives in Lake Oswego. He was in the military during the Vietnam War, and he told me that this was his very first. He wasn't even at the Women's March, back in January. And he said he plans more actions. What actions are you planning, in addition to the Women's March and now this protest in Lake Oswego, to keep expressing your views about the president and the current direction of the country?
I think any of them that pop up, I will go to, and I'll make time out of my day to go to them and talk and, like, give my opinion.
Well, Christian, thanks very much. And Jennifer, she's got her hands full right now with Kingsley and Charlie. Christian, I think I posted on Facebook after I saw your video that I think the country is in very good hands coming up. With people like you, young people. We've been talking live in the KBOO studios with Christian Bedford, a 12-year-old student at Lake Oswego Junior High, and his mom, Jennifer Cook, along with Kingsley and Charlie, who were in Lake Oswego last Saturday for the Stand for Love protest against Donald Trump.
And now it's time for This Week in Water from H2O Radio.
How to make the Great Lakes not so great again. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
The news last week centers on cuts, cuts, and more cuts as a draft of the proposed federal budget was leaked from the dripping Trump administration.
The document shows a 25% reduction in funding of the EPA and also a 20% reduction in personnel.
ABC News obtained the proposed budget that would chop climate initiatives by 70% and make major reductions to programs like the restoration of San Francisco Bay, Lake Champlain, and upstate New York, and Long Island Sound.
And there's much more. Funds for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative would be cut from $300 million to $10. That program combats invasive species, restores wildlife habitats, and cleans up watersheds polluted by Rust Belt factories.
Cleaning the Great Lakes has traditionally enjoyed strong bipartisan support in Congress, and even Republicans are pushing back.
Representative Fred Upton of Michigan Morgan told MLive Media that the draft budgets are alarming and that the Great Lakes must be a priority.
Other cuts include the EPA's Environmental Justice Program, which emphasizes cleaning up Black, Hispanic, and low-income communities that are disproportionately affected by pollution.
Ken Cook, president of the Environmental Working Group, told The Guardian that the administration is sending a shameful message that the health of poor Americans is less important than that of the wealthy.
The Trump administration's final budget is due to be submitted by the middle of this month.
Even more slashing is proposed in the scientific research done by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
The budget would curtail research and satellite programs. One satellite to be cut would collect necessary information to predict weather, make agricultural forecasts, and help in disaster planning as the climate warms.
The Washington Post reports that the draft budget would also eliminate a variety of smaller programs, including coastal management efforts to strengthen shorelines to withstand major storms and rising seas.
Jane Lubchenco, NOAA administrator under Obama, said that 90% of the information for weather forecasts comes from satellites, and cutting NOAA's budget will compromise the agency's mission of keeping Americans safe. 2 years ago, the Obama administration enacted a rule that would define what waters in the country are covered by the Clean Water Act.
Identifying those waters is no simple task. The Clean Water Act requires the federal government to regulate large bodies of water so they're not polluted.
But those larger bodies of water are fed by smaller streams, wetlands, and rivers that are easily polluted by things like agricultural and urban runoff.
The purpose of the rule was to clarify which rivers, creeks, and streams that connect to larger water bodies are protected under the Clean Water Act, but the rule never officially took effect due to litigation.
Trump signed an order last week instructing the EPA and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to review the rule.
Opponents of the Obama rule were ecstatic. Farmers and their political supporters say the regulation is an overreach and might threaten their private property.
But it won't be easy to get rid of the existing rule. The Washington Post explained that to eliminate it, there will have to be a full notice and comment period, and then the agencies will have to adequately respond to the comments they receive.
And after that, it's highly likely that there will be lawsuits from both blue states and environmental groups.
One contaminant that gets into water is lead, used in ammunition and fish tackle.
Ryan Zinke was sworn in last week as Secretary of the Interior, and after riding to his new office on his horse, he promptly cut an Obama administration rule that banned the use of lead in fishing and hunting on national wildlife areas.
While some sportsmen applauded Zinke's reversal, environmental groups criticized it, saying that spent lead casings cause poisoning in 130 species of birds and other animals.
The main objection to banning lead for hunting and fishing is that alternatives cost more. Even so, some states, including California, ban the metal, and Arizona has offered substitutes for sportsmen who choose not to use it. And finally, there was a troubling statistic that came out of a conference held at the Vatican last week. One in five species on Earth now faces extinction, and that number will likely double by the end of the century.
Researchers warn of an approaching major extinction event caused by destruction of ecosystems, deforestation, overgrazing, and of course, climate change.
Although endangered species like rhinos and tigers make headlines, the scientists say there are less famous plants and animals that we should be worried about too. These species purify our air and water, regenerate soil, provide food and medicine. They make life on Earth possible.
And as serious as losing leopards and lemurs is, destroying ecosystems could be causing the extinction of something else. Words.
According to Outside Magazine, six nouns could go the way of the dodo bird because of climate change.
Terms like leg basket. That's a structure on bees' legs used to collect pollen. Bees are crucial pollinators that help produce our food, and they are threatened not only by pesticides, but also by shorter winters and shrinking habitats.
Another goner might be something called a scallop dredge. That's a rake-like device dragged along the ocean floor to collect shellfish. ocean acidification from burning fossil fuels is eating away at scallop shells and preventing growth of larvae.
And then there's the more familiar lift line. Average global temperature has risen 1.5 degrees since 1880. Warmer weather means precipitation that does fall will come as rain rather than snow at ski areas. And if all of this makes you want to pour yourself something strong, sorry. Another word that might disappear is hogshead. That's the word for the casks where wineries and breweries store their products. It might become defunct as prolonged drought and extreme heat are affecting yields and increasing pests.
The possibility that we'd have to face annihilation without our favorite stout or Merlot?
That leaves us at a loss for words.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Build a better world through better water at AWWA's ACE 17 in Philadelphia, June 11th through 14th. Learn more at awwa.org/ACE17.
Researchers at the California Academy of Sciences have found that cancer rates in California sea lions have exploded over the last 3 years. Almost 20% of all wild sea lions who were recently tested were found to have cancer. The rate's even higher at the California Marine Mammal Center, where more than 25% of all sea lion deaths were attributed to cancer. The 19% cancer rate in wild California sea lions is one of the highest cancer rates ever found in a wild animal population, and scientists say the rate is far from normal. Also hitting the California sea lion population is a stunningly high 90% mortality rate for sea lion pups over the last 3 years. Some scientists say radiation from Fukushima is causing the rapid increase in cancer rates, while other scientists point to warming water and ocean acidification as possible culprits.
The Great Barrier Reef, located off the coast of Australia, is once again being hit by a major bleaching event. This is the second year in a row that over 90% of the reef is undergoing a bleaching event. Coral bleaching occurs when ocean water temperatures become too warm for the corals to grow and survive. If the warm water conditions continue for more than 6 weeks, the reef is unable to recover and dies. In 2016, 93% of the reef underwent coral bleaching, leading to a 20% mortality rate. This year, the rate is 95%. It is not yet known what this year's mortality rate will be. The Great Barrier Reef is the world's largest living organism, with parts believed to be almost 20 million years old. While this year's bleaching event is the largest on record, the reef is also threatened by pesticide and fertilizer runoff, and by dredging and mining operations. Coral reef experts say that up to half of the reef is already dead, and the entire reef could be wiped out by the year 2030.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Don Zur, Tony LaTigra, and Ken Jones. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News and H2O Radio. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News Director is Zell Marchant. And the Evening Public Affairs Director is Kanan Schlesinger. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Zell Marchant. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, the Abe and Joe Talk radio show takes your calls to discuss politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist. At 9, on alternative radio, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg speaks out about gender equality. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Janice Bernstein. At 11, on stage and studio, the creators of two new productions visit KBOO. Acclaimed Chilean puppet theater company Silencio Blanco bring their inventive play, The Silence of Coal, to Portland. Then a look at Northwest Dance Project's production of Carmen. And at 11:30, it's Art Focus, interviews with curators, writers, and artists. Thanks, KBOO members, for all of your generous support. If you're not a member, you can fix that by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donates. Good night, Ken.
Good night, Sal.
Good night, Danielle.